Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
News Radio 930 WBEN. On News Radio 930 WBEN, it's Hardline with Joe Beamer, where people in power come to talk.
I'm Tom Puckett, in for Joe Beamer this morning. This is Hardline for Sunday, November 10th, 2024. My thanks to my guests first hour, Josh Hall of the United Steelworkers Local 136L on the closing of the Sumitomo plant. I also spoke with Erie County Executive Mark Polenkars on the Sumitomo closing. Also, a little bit about his thoughts on the results of the 2024 presidential election. And we also got a sneak peek into what Mark will be doing next at the conclusion of his term. He told us, and he has said this before, that this is his final term as the Erie County Executive. This hour, we're going to discuss more about the election aftermath. Dave Leventhal of Washington Insider will be joining me at 11:30, but right now, joining me on the WBEN Trocare College Live line is UB political science professor Sean Donahue. Sean, good morning.
Good morning.
Sean, I'm looking at the results of the presidential election and looking at the numbers from 2024 compared to 2020. And one thing that sticks into my mind and really just comes across here is the overall turnout in 2020, we had 155 million people vote for either Democrat or Republican. In Tuesday's election, 145 million or so voted in the presidential election, or about 2 million voting for third party, 2 to 3 million voting for third party candidates. Overall, the turnout was lower. Yet Donald Trump only picked up about 400,000 more votes on Tuesday than he did 4 years earlier. Where did the Democrats go wrong in getting the turnout that they did 4 years ago?
Well, I think that one thing we have to keep in mind is that there's a lot of votes out in the West. They're still being counted. So those numbers will change a little bit because there's still quite a few places like Arizona and California and Oregon and Washington. But I mean, I think that the Democrats, they're really having what I think is going to be a very interesting family feud or family fight coming up. Because in places Democrats needed turnout, they didn't get it, and you know, among other voters, it seems that there were people that voted for Biden in 2020 and voted for Trump in 2024, particularly among Latinos and Asians.
Immigration was one of the big issues during the 2024 election, And especially after comments made by a comedian at a pro-Trump rally at Madison Square Garden, the Trump campaign was quick to denounce the comments that Tony Hinchcliffe made about Puerto Rico and it has been an island of garbage. But how did that change the opinions of voters, Latinos in particular, to vote for Trump in spite of what we heard from Tony Hinchcliffe at that one rally?
Well, it didn't seem to have the effect that some people in the media said it would. You know, I mean, maybe Trump would have done a little bit better. But, I mean, he really improved among Latino voters across the board, and in particular Puerto Rican Americans, because, you know, you look at the places where they make up a large chunk of the electorate, say like Osceola County, Florida, which is south of Orlando, the Bronx, Reading and Allentown in Pennsylvania. You know, you saw massive movement in favor of Trump.
Immigration and the economy seem to be the two big sticking points, and it turned out Donald Trump may have conveyed his message better than the Biden than Harris message when it came to this election cycle. Where do you think Biden and later Harris went wrong when it came? Was it the immigration policies? Was it their handling of inflation that did the Democrats in this time around?
I think it was a combination of those two things. And, you know, I think that Democrats were kind of pointing out, you know, OK, we had this bipartisan border bill, you know, that would help to shut down the illegal migrant crossings. You know, but we couldn't get the Republicans to go along. And then Biden actually did some executive actions. But I think that the response from the Trump campaign and Republicans was pretty strong. Like, why did it take you three and a half years to do it? You know, the other thing with inflation is that, you know, the Biden administration can point to, you know, we have inflation down to 2%. Well, you know, I'm just thinking about this because I just had a birthday a few days ago. I'm 46, and I have, before this inflationary period started, you know, I would have been, you know, 4 or 5 years old. So unless somebody's probably at the age of 50 or higher, they've really never experienced actual inflation to the degree that we had a few years ago. And a lot of folks, you know, whenever they're going to the grocery store, you know, they're seeing the prices maybe aren't going up as much, but they're not coming down.
We've heard claims of price gouging, the supply chain shortage as a result of COVID. That happened under Biden's watch, but COVID and the shutdown started under Trump's watch. How were voters trying to decipher over who really was to blame for that?
Well, you know, one of the terms that I've heard some folks in the media use is that there was kind of a Trump amnesia, kind of that people were thinking about Trump, the economy under Trump in his first 3 years, and not really wanting to think too much about COVID. I think that a lot of us tried to put that period out of our minds, because, you know, you're stuck at home, couldn't go anywhere. Schools were closed. Restaurants were closed. You know, people weren't traveling. So, you know, I think that it sometimes takes a while for when the economy actually does improve for people to feel it more. And that's something that's probably going to be to the benefit of Trump when he takes office, because, you know, he's going to be inheriting actually a pretty good economy with low inflation, interest rates moving down, and low unemployment. So, you know, it's something that I'm sure that he will try to take credit for as soon as he takes office, if not before.
And you brought up earlier on the immigration office that bipartisan plan, if I recall correctly, some Republicans were influenced by Donald Trump to vote against this and scuttle it in Congress. And as you mentioned, executive actions taken by President Biden. How much of that would you say may have been a strategy in the Trump reelection campaign?
Oh, I think you have to definitely say that it was that, you know, that that he really wanted the issue rather this is what a number of folks are saying, that that he would rather have the issue than a solution, at least that Biden would get credit for. So the one thing is that, you know, immigration is an area where the president has a lot of powers that have been delegated to him by the Congress. So I think you're going to see a lot of executive orders come within a few hours of Trump taking office on January the 20th.
Sean Donohue of UB, political science professor. He is my guest this morning on Hardline. I'm Tom Puckett in for Joe Beamer. Sean, I'm looking at the presidential electoral vote count map. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada, Alaska, and Arizona. 4 years ago, they were Biden states. This time around, they went to Trump. All but Alaska were really the big swing states and big prizes in this year's presidential race. Where did things go wrong for Kamala Harris in those states? Did she spend too much time in Pennsylvania as Michigan and instead of going to Michigan and Wisconsin as well?
Well, she would have needed Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, plus the electoral vote that she did win in Nebraska, to hit exactly 270 electoral votes. I think maybe you could say that maybe she should have not focused on Nevada, Arizona, and North Carolina so much. You know, would a few more stops in Detroit or Milwaukee have changed the result? I mean, it's possible. You know, we look back at 2016 where Hillary Clinton did not ever travel to Wisconsin, where it was a factor. But, you know, one thing that I would just kind of point out is that the swing nationally against Democrats was actually, in the swing states was actually less than it was nationally. So the Harris campaign had some had a little bit of effectiveness vis-a-vis how the country went, but it just wasn't enough. I mean, I really have to wonder how much this election was baked in, you know, before Kamala Harris even got in the race, given the fact that Joe Biden in the exit polls had a 40% approval rating. I mean, and the fact that the poll showed that the people thought that the economy was not good and that things were on the wrong track on so many issues.
How likely is it where that if Kamala Harris had been asked to take over right after the debate in June, it sounds like she would not have had a chance no matter how soon Joe Biden stepped out of that race. He's been getting a lot of criticism in the days after the election for not doing that sooner.
Well, what Republicans were doing is they were not just running against Kamala Harris. They were running against the Biden-Harris administration, which was not popular, which seemed to be pretty effective. You know, I mean, had she gotten an extra 20 days, I don't know if that really would have made that much of a difference. I mean, one of the interviews that she did was one on The View where she was asked, you know, what would you do different than Joe Biden? And, you know, she had an answer that came out as, you know, I really can't think of anything. And for folks that were looking for, you know, change, that was a pretty devastating statement that she made. So kind of going off of your question a little bit, I think that you're already starting to see some Democrats say that maybe Joe Biden shouldn't have even run at all. You know, if he would have announced after the midterm elections that he wasn't running again, that you could have had an open Democratic primary that Kamala Harris may well have won, but you would have had, the chance for a number of candidates to have ran.
And going back to 2016, when Hillary Clinton was up against Bernie Sanders in that primary, there were superdelegates that could be committed to anybody. Almost all of them went to Hillary Clinton, and it seemed no matter how many primaries Bernie Sanders or others won, Hillary Clinton was going to get that nomination, and it may have turned off some voters. The fact that Kamala Harris was basically inheriting Biden's primary delegates, how much of that could have turned off voters, not just on the Democratic side, but the Republican side?
Well, that's an interesting comparison. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders would have lost the nomination even with no superdelegates, mainly because he did so poorly among African-Americans in the South and Hillary Clinton just dominated those Southern primaries. But it was an argument that Republicans were making this year, you know, about, you know, when Democrats were talking about, you know, democracy, and their response was, well, you know, 14, 15 million people voted for Joe Biden, and you pushed him out of the race, and basically you anointed one person. I mean, the reason, of course, is that they anointed one person is that basically Biden put his thumb on the scale endorsing Harris about 30 minutes after he announced, you know, via a press release that he was dropping out. And while you had a good supply of really strong candidates, a number of them governors from swing states like Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer, or, you know, maybe a Senator Mark Kelly, none of them really seriously considered getting into the race. So, you know, you had a good supply. I don't know, trying to get the right word, supply and demand. But, you know, you had a lot of people that, you know, that I think people would have like to considered, but none of them, I think, wanted to try to take on Kamala Harris, you know, in the fact that you would be displacing the first female vice president of color on the ticket, given the Democratic coalition.
We have seen Hillary Clinton lose in 2016 to Donald Trump. We've seen Kamala Harris lose to Donald Trump this past Tuesday. How much is it that there is a Trump mystique versus a fear of a woman president in the United States?
Well, I think that's a really good question, you know, and it's something that Democrats, I think, they're probably going to be thinking about in 2028, which I know it sounds kind of early because, you know, this election just ended, but that's already in a lot of Democratic primary voters' minds. The vast majority, or not the vast majority, but a strong majority of whom will be women, you know. But I think you know what you're talking about with the Trump mystique is that, you know, Trump, you know, is for those of us that are a little bit older, you know, he's been in our lives for a long time. You know, I remember as a kid seeing him in Home Alone 2. But kind of getting into the political realm, you know, he started doing that during the Obama administration with the birth certificate thing. You know, strongly considered running in 2012, but didn't. You know, surprised if some people got in 2016. And, you know, barring something unexpected, you know, he's going to be in office until 2029. I think that we're probably going to look at basically two decades kind of being almost the age of Trump. Even when he wasn't president, he was omnipresent, you know, in media coverage in our lives. I mean, think about during the Biden administration, how many news cycles were we talking about Trump and not the sitting president?
And after this term in 2028, Donald Trump cannot run. This is his second and final term. Maybe putting the cart before the horse. Who could be the Republican candidate in 2028?
Well, you know, every sitting vice president that has sought the nomination of their party, I believe, since 1952 with Alvin Barkley, has gotten the nomination. So, you know, it would seem that J.D. Vance would probably have the edge. The question, you know, of course, is, you know, how does he perform as vice president? You know, he's only 40 years old, so he's going to be fairly young. One thing that we saw during the campaign is that his favorability numbers were not great. You know, he will have the chance to try to improve them over the next 4 years. But, you know, he is kind of an embodiment of, you know, at least currently, of kind of the hardcore MAGA Trump base that dominates the party.
All right. Sean, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Hardline.
My pleasure.
That is Sean Donahue, political science professor at the University at Buffalo, joining me on the WBEN Trocare College Live Line. And when we come back, we will hear from Washington insider Dave Leventhal, and we'll be talking more about the aftermath of Tuesday's presidential election. Hardline continues on WBEN at 11:24.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.